AI. It's a small pair of letters which is everywhere these days. Do you really know what it is? Do you really know how we can use it? Are you for it? Are you against it? Why have you made up your mind already? I'm going to be talking to Dr. Mahtab Sarvmaili, the head of UNB's Responsible AI Lab, which just opened up in May. Welcome, Dr. Sarvmaili.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here, and I really love to have the discussion around the AI with you.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. People may have heard that I have spoke glowingly about AI, and I have for a long time, but I am concerned with the way that we're doing it. So I'm very excited to see this lab opening up. First off, just talk about the lab itself. It began in May of this year. And what is the goal? What is the idea of this lab?
Sure. So actually, the idea of the Responsible AI Lab was started in January because I started working in January. So I had this idea that I wanted to have a lab that the focus is about the responsible AI. But the responsible AI is coming from many pillars. There are so many characteristics about that, how to responsibly adopt AI. And the idea was actually from the part of my research that I did during my PhD and also my postdoc. My PhD was about the explaining AI, how the AI work, how the machine thinks, and how they are making the predictions. And then during my postdoc, it was about the time that the LLM augmented systems or using large language model and generative AI and agentic system become very popular. And there was a discussion about, okay, now we have this system, how we can evaluate them. This was part of the research I did. So it became very important for me to have this discussion and have this topic as the head of my research, that we have to use AI, but we have to use it responsibly. And I think it was a really good coincidence with the release of Canada AI strategy, which is, I think, AI for all. And I'm so happy that the government had this idea that we should use AI, we should adopt it. It's really efficient, makes everything efficient, makes really help the workers, but we have to be responsible about that. And the core pillars that they proposed, I thought that this is amazing. This is very aligned with what I want to have for my research. And that's how RAI or Responsible AI Lab came into place.
How does it go from being an idea in January to a lab in May? What's that process like?
The process, to be honest, is about that, okay, bringing the key points and the bringing the people who are interested about this. And I think that the start of discussion is about explainability, interpretability of AI systems. Sorry for these jargons, but the main idea is that, okay, you have this system, I want to understand it, I want to explain it. And this is explainable and interpretability. But now all of these key pillars, they are coming together. So I wanted to gather people who are excited about this. So I started discussing with people around the campus, with the other faculty members. And this was a good point that to start having this discussion about the responsible AI. And I thought that this is a great point in time that I want to have this. And responsible AI, this was the process. To be honest, more about the discussion and talking to people, getting the people who are interested. And now we are even a small research lab, but we have done like a lot of research even the past couple of like 8 months so far. So, yeah.
And you've already found some partners both within UNB as well as within other institutions. Is there a similar lab directly to what you're doing, or is it, because I saw some of the partners where they are AI researchers, but they're more about efficiency or effectiveness or those sorts of things. Are there other responsibility researchers?
So if you don't mind, I would like to give a bit more context, because when it comes to this topic of responsible AI, and the discussion that we have that, okay, when you want to adopt the AI system, it should be understandable by the user, it should be efficient, it should be reliable, and all of these key pillars, when it comes to the more mathematical and theoretical aspect of analyzing the models, the border become a little bit blurry. So if someone, there are people that are doing great research on AI, and you can actually adopt them. But the focus may be on maybe on the application of AI in the, for example, real world problems or something else. But the research is, can be a little bit blurry. You cannot just discriminate, oh, this is just about responsible AI or this is just the application. Because what I wanted to actually advocate for the responsible AI is that this is not just principles. This is not just ethics or regulations, but this is more about the core understanding of the model or the technology or the system that you are using. So that's why even someone is not just focused on responsible AI, maybe their research is very, very attuned and productive for moving this field forward. Another example is that I want to say that I'm working on the fairness and bias of the AI, but this would come to you more about ethics or regulations. But when we are deploying the model or when we are training these models, we want to be sure that our data is a good representative of the society or the community or the problem that we want to solve. If it's not a good representative of that problem, then you don't have a good model. So it's not just about one key aspect. Maybe there are people that are doing the research on different domains, so they can all can be considered as part of the responsible AI.
So it's really a matter of focus. Yes. With all of the other things still present. Yes. You still have to build the things to actually judge how well they're doing.
Yes.
Or whether they're doing the right thing. It feels as though we had an incredible AI explosion in the last few years. I've known about the concepts of AI, and we've dreamt about them. Sometimes it was about the computation limitations. You know, your computers just can't work fast enough to do the things you want them to do. And it feels like we've just exploded in the last few years. For you, how far back does AI research go? Is it something you've always dreamed about or something you came into when you started looking into computer science?
So for me, I think it was the last year of my undergrad studies that there was a book that's like a very classical AI book. I forget the name of that, but it was talking about that how you can, for example, train these models to work in an environment. And it was the point that, oh, this is very classical, but this is very amazing. They are talking about training a machine that works autonomously. This is so exciting. And by the time that I was graduating, it was 2015. And I think by 2015, it was the time that AlphaGo was released by DeepMind. And it was a huge breakthrough because they had the AlphaGo, the model that beat human player in the game of Go. So it was amazing. It was outstanding. And it became like very important for me to have this understanding and how this, oh, what is happening? How they're using this machine learning model? This is like just math. But how it can play this game, how it's possible. So it was very fascinating for me. And I think that because it was like a process was going on. And I think during my master, which I started in 2015, I think September, yes. And during that time, it was like the early era of the OpenAI. And I think by the 2017, they were working on some gaming environment. So it was like an ongoing process, and I was always fascinated by the progress and these outcomes that I see. So for me, go back to maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
And the thing about your explanation is just how much joy I can see coming from you as you talk about this. It is fascinating too, apparently.
Yes, yes. I'm so fascinated by this. And I was so excited to see that all of these intelligent people gather around, they talk about the problem, they want to address this, and they bring a little math and they put this together. Now we have a machine, a model that like you can just run it on your computer and then it solves the problem that we have been facing so many times, like for so long, and it seemed impossible. But now with the intelligence of the human just designing this system, now we see the outcome. It's amazing.
It solves problems, but it also creates new ones. We became very familiar with the notion of hallucinations, for example, in LLMs, which were things it just created trying to satisfy the problem, but not out of actual real data. Is that some of the elements you want to examine in this lab?
Yes. So the hallucination and all of these issues that we see with the progress of AI, these are part of the process to get to the point that the model works really good, because we have to go step by step. At the beginning, you cannot make something to be perfect. So there are always problems or challenges. So the hallucination was part of that, that the model didn't have access to, for example, the most updated data. So they tried to include or give some accessibility to the internet, to the most updated resources. So now the model can make judgment and produce an outcome that is up to date or valid, and it actually is accurate. And then there has been a lot of ongoing research on how we can address the hallucination, or for example, give them the during the training process, how we can improve this and reduce the hallucination, what the data we should pass on for during the training process of the models. I'm sorry if I'm using too much jargon.
It's fine for me, but we can explain a bit perhaps. Yes. to the audience as well, because a lot of it did derive from the training data that was created. One of the things that fascinates me is that you said your thesis was on explainability, which is a big problem with a lot of these, because it's one thing for it to be able to generate something. It's another thing to understand where that generation came from.
Yeah. This is actually very interesting, because you need to ask the model how you make this prediction. It may come up with some reasoning, but it may not be the actual reasoning or the actual process that is behind that decision making. And okay, for understanding this, how the outcome was produced, do we need to look into the training data? Do we need to look into the processing or the information flow that is happening in these models? Or do we need to map the question that we asked and see that how it propagated, and then during each step, how the model made a decision, so now it comes to this producing this output. So a lot of aspects going on in explaining this, and we cannot all, we don't rely on the explanation that when you ask an LLM, okay, how you made this prediction, they may come up with something, but it's not reliable. So we don't always like trust them on explaining the truth. So this is like very important part of that understanding how these models are making predictions. And as the system become more complicated, for example, now you have these LLMs or these large language models or a machine learning model that has access to these tools, and they have access, for example, to internet, they have access to, for example, tools that they, by tools I mean, for example, the functions that they can run on your computer, and they, for example, make a change on your system settings or make a change on your files or something like that, that you have this, they have these tools, but now that this is a very complicated scenario. So how this decision making propagated, how the model made the decision, all of these key aspects, they are very difficult. And this is a system that needs to be explained. Otherwise you cannot trust it. So this is a very fascinating research, and that's why I'm so excited about this.
I mean, it's a great time to be into this kind of research. I think it was Claude, maybe not, but one of the models has a sort of explain as it goes or show its reasoning as well to try to demonstrate that. And it's interesting to see it in progress, to see it actually trying to explain what it's thinking, although it slows it down a bit because now it has to interpret itself as it's going along. But backing up a little bit, you've mentioned, for example, machine learning and LLMs and game playing. Does it frustrate you as a researcher who knows what these all are when they're all lumped together into one form? It feels like everybody knows the LLM interface and thinks that's the entirety of AI.
Exactly, because that's how people had the first, maybe like most of the people had the first encounter with the AI, because now you have the interfaces, you can just need to, for example, write down ChatGPT and the website comes up and then you can ask question, and that's the AI that we all had the first encounter with. But there are tons of the process or tons of the other beautiful aspects of AI that exist, but we don't see it and we don't get in, have encounter with. And for example, we see, as I said, I started my research. My research has been going on for so long, but during my PhD, just a very, very example that how the AI can help with a real world problem is that, for example, for the fish farming, that we need to use a machine learning model to extract the data that we had and then predict, for example, in the fish farming, when would be the best time to insert the oxygen in these fishing pens that exist in the ocean. So this is one example of the machine learning or AI, but this is not something that we all every day we would see. But this is an amazing example that helps the humanity, helps with the problems, with everything that we had a very great real world application. But this is something that I'm so excited about to talk about, to get more attention about this beautiful application of AI, but also large language models and generative AI is part of that, how so many people get excited about AI. So we cannot discourage them, but we should also keep in mind that another world also exists here.
Yeah, and there usually isn't an LLM attached to those types of things. So you can't ask it the sort of free-form questions that you would think of with AI. In some ways, they're almost functioning more like machines with a fuzzy middle in which they're doing all the calculations, working out these complex problems. But you know the inputs and you know what the expected outputs are going to be, even if you don't know the specific values. Yeah and it frustrates me a little bit because people, kind of lump it all together. And it becomes a very negative for a lot of people. There's a lot of rejection of AI or even of being anywhere near for numerous reasons. Is the societal reaction to AI another element of the things you want to look at with responsible AI?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's what I want to talk about it, because I think that the society shouldn't be afraid of embracing AI. So one of the greatest example is AI in education. I know that the parents and everybody is so freaked out that, wow, our kids are going to use AI and they won't learn or they won't be creative. And this is just about like something that they would spend tons of their times and they won't get any outcome out of this. But I will give you a very amazing example that I was part of that during the AI summit that happened, I think in June. Actually, here at UMB, we had a very amazing AI summit. And prior to that, we had a competition for youth, which was the theme of that competition was for the middle schooler to think about the ideas how they can use AI for the health and the environmental impact of AI or the saving the environments. And I've seen that how amazing people, like the kids, were thinking about and how they were using this. I would give you an example that I was very excited about that, which we had a group of amazing girls from the Dalhousie school, and they had developed this app using AI to help with the mental health and help with the stress, coping with the stress. And it was a very, very amazing app that I wanted to ask them, can I play around with your app? It was great. And I saw that all of the thought process that they went into this. And when they're talking about the development of the app, when they mentioned that, oh, we gave the AI system a prompt to generate this for us, but then we had some problems. And all of the observation that they had, I thought that, okay, it's amazing. This is the actual research going on. And I thought that this is the time that you make the students and the kids to be excited about it and make and use the AI as a tool to create, to develop their ideas, to think broad, and then create, actually. So don't discourage it.
I mentioned it was a good time to be involved with AI, but it also is a hard time to be involved with AI. This is a very much a moving target. There's new things coming out. There's a real push to integrate it perhaps more deeply than we're ready for. How do you tackle that problem of trying to stay current, but also not chasing, moments too fast?
I don't want to discourage people and be afraid of AI, but they also should be cautious. And they should be very cautious about how they are using. So this is a great tool, but this is not the best or the most knowledgeable or omniscience thing in the world. So you have to be very, very cautious about using that. If it gives it would be a tool for you, but if you are asking a question, this is not the end answer. You have to be very cautious. You have to validate that. You have to be questioning about the validity and factuality of the answer that it's generating. And the trustworthy is part of this discussion about the AI that you cannot always trust, because you don't know that the data that went to the training these models or to their use for them and how they are thinking on how they are making the decision. So that's why I'm so excited about using it as a tool, but don't always rely on this. And let your imagination and your ideas go crazy, but don't always think that this is the end or I have to fully trust this. No. And part of the trust would be like addition to trustworthiness of the responses. There are parts that, for example, I think the ongoing discussion about the cybersecurity and the safety of these models and this using these agentic systems or these frameworks, which happened very recent and was announced by, for example, a model or a swarm or a group of models. They made the security breaches to the Hugging Face, which is a website that everybody use and deploy their data set or their models. And this agentic system, they made a coalition to make an attack to that to that website. So be cautious, but don't be afraid to use it. I think that this would be some discussion again, which can, every time that the technology is developed, people at first would be very afraid. But don't be afraid, but learn how to properly use it.
I wonder if they kind of got off on the wrong foot to begin with. There's a lot of criticism about the use of training data or the sort of tacit acceptance. They believe that anything that was on the web was essentially public, therefore they could use it for training. Do you feel like there's some elements of that can still be questioned, or is it kind of the thing where we've trained the models now, it's almost too late to go back and answer that question?
Yes, that would be something that, because I don't want to go deep in that in the rabbit hole, but there has been a discussion that maybe, I'm not saying that it's confirmed, but they were trying to use the books and they kind of like scanned it using the OCR, and they use it for the training data. I am not saying that it was a terrible decision, and it didn't respect the rights or the copyrights or anything. And this is that's why maybe people are, as you mentioned, that they're very negative toward AI. But there is another discussion that without using that data, would be able to have the models that we have today. So
yeah. Yeah, they made a decision, they didn't tell anybody about it. And I think that probably was the worst part about it, because the discovery of that made it feel worse than it was.
Yes.
And on the other side of that, of course, we have people who are using AI, but they're using it in perhaps unethical ways. Is that something you can tackle within your research?
Yeah, and this is what we want to have as part of the research, because the privacy and the reliability and also the trustworthiness, and also being sure that when you're using AI, it's safe and it's private. You're not going to have a breach of confidentiality or breach of your private data on the internet because an agentic system decided that, oh, today I don't feel good, I'm going to publish all of your data. So this is a part of the research that we want to have. But this is the research that I'm fascinated about is more foundation and mathematical and analyzing the models and system from the scientific perspective. And when it comes to this, it needs to be evaluated, needs to go through the experimental process. But the progress of the technology is really fast, really rapid. So that's why I want to encourage everyone to actually take a moment and think that this part of the research is ongoing. This is actually very beautiful, and it should be incorporated in everyone's mind when they want to think about the development of their model, their systems, or their framework. And this is how, as a society, we can help each other. Even this is just one person. I'm doing some research at responsible AI in this small part of the world. But when we come together and we talk about this and we have this discussion, so we can make a good progress. And I'm really hoping to have more collaboration with faculties from around at UMB or in Atlantic Canada to have this discussion and to have the collaboration about the responsible AI.
There's a lot of stuff here, and I could keep asking because I'm also a bit of an enthusiast about this, and I'm somewhat knowledgeable. There's so many different areas I can ask about, from model updates to you know, all the explainability questions. But I almost wonder, do you feel in some ways like the topic is too big? Do you have to find yourself kind of curtailing any of the discussion, saying, okay, we could do that, but we would do all these other things too?
That's another part of narrowing down the research is very difficult, because every day something can be very exciting for me, especially in this field of explainability, interpretability, and responsible adoption of AI. So one part of it is the privacy, but when we talk about the privacy, maybe more when it comes to what it comes to mind, for example, is that, oh, it should we have the encryption, we have to more from the networks or the cybersecurity part of the view. But what I'm really fascinated about, okay, now I have to train a model that is private, that is aligned with the privacy, how I can use the math for this aspect. But again, now the next day, something else comes in. Okay, now how I can do it, research about that. And it's a very fascinating era. It's a fascinating topic, but it's very difficult to keep it narrow. So that's why for now, the vision that I have for my research lab is that we will be focused on two key pillars of responsible AI. One is that explainability and interpretability, and the other one is control of the models to ensure the safety, privacy, and also trustworthiness of this system. This is the initial goal that I have for my research lab, and I hope that as we expand and we recruit more students, there would be other directions of the research that we can look into.
I think you should deservedly get a lot of attention and a lot of support. In those pillars, are there particular topics or particular research you're doing right now that you'd like to share, or something you're working on?
Sure. This would be something that a part of the ongoing research by the end of my PhD, throughout my postdoc, and I continued working with my PhD lab, continued this research, and I'll still get some of the students excited about this topic, which is about that. So this is like, I will drop the jargon, but I will explain it. This is called machine unlearning. So you have these models, it has been learned, trained, it's in the deployment, but then the user comes in and asks that, can you please remove my information from your training data? I don't want to be part of that. But the model has been trained, how you can remove that information. And this is very beautiful that, okay, now we should look into the model, the parameters, how this information is encoded in those parameters. Now how we can extract it without damaging the model performance. Still, the model won't remember about that user, but still keeps it the performance. This is a part of the research that can be from the privacy perspective. And another part of the research is about the explainability, and it's about the collaboration with Institute of Biomedical Engineering, and also another collaboration with Dr. Stan De Burmaker here at the UMB, which is part about that, okay, how we can explain these large language models from the perspective of the parameters, the internal processing, the information flow, and how we can use that explainability to further enhance the performance. This is the two of the ongoing research. I know that this is a short time, like short period of time, 8 months, but this is how it's going.
Well, it all sounds fascinating to me. I hope people at home are also getting a sense of both the importance of doing this kind of research and the momentum that you already have. Is there a place where people can follow the research or find out more online about the Responsible AI Lab?
Yes, yes. We have our website, and we tend to keep it updated as much as we can, and then we post about our discussion and the recent lab news and also the publications that we have. And this would be on the rai.cs.umb.ca, rai.cs.umb.ca, and people can reach out to us, and I would be so happy if our organizations, if our government, if our public workers and private companies, they would reach out. Because, as I said, responsible AI is really beautiful, and people think that, is it regulation? Is it ethics? But I want to say that it's not just about that. We do very foundation research, mm-hmm. and we want to make sure that the model that you are using, it's trustworthy, so you can relay back and then trust your model and to do its job properly.
And I'm assuming that's the same place that students who might be interested in getting involved in the research can go?
Yes, definitely, yes. And so many of our students reached out to us through our website, and they can communicate, and then I would be so happy to have a discussion.
Well, it is fascinating. It sounds like a great start, and I want to thank you very much for joining me, Dr. Mahtab Sarfmali is the head of UNB's Responsible AI Lab, just begun this year, but it's going to be around and it's going to do some great work. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.